family and friends and guests. On behalf of Jack Iverson's family, I welcome you to our sanctuary, and I thank you for your presence here today. My name is Craig Schwallenberg, and I am the minister here at the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta. It is my solemn privilege to be here with you today, for together we gather to honor and remember and celebrate the life of Jack Richard Iverson. You bless this space with your love and your laughter, your tears, your memories, and your stories. A human life is sacred. It is sacred in its being born, it is sacred in its living, and it is sacred in its dying. We've asked Jack's grandchildren to light our candle of life. We light this candle in memory of Jack Iverson, in memory of Jack's life. It is a fragile flame and can be extinguished by a chance gust of air. But even if the flame is not extinguished unexpectedly, the burning flame will eventually consume the candle. A candle has its allotted time to burn, and so too does a human have an allotted time to live. Yet while the candle burns for a short time or a long time, it radiates warmth and comfort and light. Flame kindles flame, life begets life. The warmth, comfort, and the light are passed on after the candle is extinguished or consumed. The fire of life and love still burns. A human life also continues in the lives it has touched and influenced. And so we light this candle in honor of the life of Jack Iverson, and in the honor of the warmth, comfort, and light, honesty, kindness, love, knowledge, and laughter that he brought into our lives. We are gathered here this day by death, the end of a good person's life, the life of Jack Iverson. Though we will mourn, for mourn we must, let this also be a time of remembering the person he was. Let this be a time for affirming the kind of life which he lived. Let this then be not so much a time of brooding upon his death, but a time for celebrating a human life and all the lives he touched. Let us be wise enough and let us be brave enough this day to honestly remember and warmly celebrate Jack's life. Unfortunately, Jack's wife, Joan Iverson, died in September and was memorialized in this very sanctuary. Joan and Jack's children thought this poem, "Should You Go First," illustrated quite eloquently their love for one another and Jack's grief at Joan's death. They've asked Bill Whitehill, a friend of the family for almost 50 years, to read the poem.
Should you go first? Should you go first and I remain to walk the road alone, I'll live in all our memories, Joan, through happy days we've known. In early spring, I'll watch for sun and wait to see the sky so blue. I'll think of all the times we shared, our dog, and me and you. I'll hear your voice, I'll see your smile, through troubled eyes I'll gaze. The memory of your helping hands will carry me and guide me on my way. Should you go first and I remain, one thing I'll ask of you. One thing I'll ask of you is to walk slowly down the long, long path, for soon I'll follow you. I want to know each step you take so I may go your way, for someday down this lonely road we'll start again and have another day.
Our second reading is inspired by Jack's love of the beach and of the water, and especially of boats. It is entitled The Unknown Shore, written by Elizabeth Clark Hardy. Sometime at eve, when the tide is low, I shall slip my moorings and sail away, with no response to a friendly hail in the silent hush of the twilight pale, when the night stoops down to embrace the day, and the voices call in the water's flow. Sometime at eve, when the water is low, I shall slip my moorings and sail away through purple shadows that darkly trail o'er the ebbing tide, and the unknown sea and the ripple of waters to tell the tale of a lonely voyager sailing away to mystic isles, where at anchor lay the craft of those who had sailed before o'er the unknown sea to the unknown shore. A few who watch me sail away will miss my craft from the busy bay. Some friendly barks were anchored near, some loving souls my heart held dear. In silent sorrow will drop a tear, but I shall have peacefully furled my sail, in mooring sheltered from the storm and gale, and greeted friends who had sailed before o'er the unknown sea to the unknown shore. This is a first for me. I am memorializing somebody who I first met at a memorial service. I had the honor and privilege of preparing the memorial service for Joan Iverson back in September. And at that time, I got to know Joan through the stories told to me by her children and her friends and from Jack as well. Though, truth be told, I remember that meeting quite well, and their children did most of the talking, with Jack making an occasional interjection only, or nodding his head when asked for confirmation by one of his children, or stepping in when they were arguing to nod assent to one or the other. Sometimes he asked a pointed question, but if I remember things most accurately, he most often made a dry comment that had us all laughing a little while later. That was, from what I have gathered and who I have talked to this time, pretty much the way Jack was for all of his life. A very quiet man, insightful, observant, knowledgeable, quiet but not silent. He was reserved but not unsociable. He preferred the company of his family and of Joan, and he preferred to be on vacation and on the water and on the beach. But he could be in social situations, and people listened when he talked. He was solid and dependable and even self-sacrificing, if need be. There was a line in the obituary that Joan wrote for Jack that said that he had to serve in the military And the line she used is the word she used is very interesting because it hides the story behind it. He went to do social justice work, and because of that could not finish school, and because of that lost his deferment. And so he went to serve. I heard that from some of the people I called to talk about Jack. The things they wanted to tell me were how much they helped them when they needed him. In hearing the stories of Joan last September, I learned not only of her, but of Jack as well. For the biggest part of their lives was their partnership, their love for one another, and the intentional blending of the two families. They were both teachers. They were both dedicated to making a difference. They were both advocates for those without a voice or those without power. They both liked West Wing, which seems fitting. They worked for social justice, together and separately. They were both fans of traveling and camping, or RVing, I guess, depending on your point of view. But ultimately, they were a team. Their children were the most important project they ever took up. Their relationship as parents, the most important practice they had. They took immense pride in their children and in their grandchildren too. And together they were quite a team. Joan was the talker of the two of them, loudly and with passion, which is my minister's way of saying she did not mince words. But when Jack spoke, everyone listened, including Joan. I think Jack was the ideas person of the two, but I could be wrong about that. I do know that Joan organized things, Jack built things. Together, they had a very tight ship. There's no way that a family of that size, blended in that way, could have survived over so many years, traveled to so many different locations, in an RV, no less, without absolute cooperation and planning and intention. And frugality. Let us not forget Jack's frugality. They worked well together, so well that they live on in the passions and the joys and the habits and the traits of their children and their children's children. They worked so well together that when Joan died last September, their teamwork tragically ended. Jack continued on living, though it was not the same anymore. Jack died this Monday of complications from cancer, but to be most honest, his life had started to ebb away when Joan died. I saw it the first day I met him. Without Joan, his life lacked order and structure. And though his love for his family never lessened at all, the love of his life was no longer next to him. Jack was not a religious man, which made our meeting for the first memorial service very interesting. Joan was the spiritual one of the two, but when asked about Joan's memorial service and his own impending death, Jack said, "I'll take what she had." I'm going to take that as a high compliment. It could be no other way, my friends. Neither of them would have had it any other way. And so here we are, Jack, remembering and honoring not only your life, but Joan's as well. But most importantly, the wonderful, intentional, love-filled life that you both built together. And that is worth celebrating. Jack's children would like to take this opportunity to share their memories and stories with us.
7 months have passed since we gathered here at last to memorize Joan, our mother. Fast forward to now, and one wonders how can we suitably honor another. Sure, that was then, and we're here yet again, this time to honor our dad. The loss of his wife had so altered his life that he just couldn't get past being sad. He tried moving on, ahead and beyond, tried resuming his life in the Keys. He tried to be bold till some troubles took hold, and we grabbed him his dog, Max, and RV. We returned them back north, but had hoped in due course their return would help start the healing, but none of us knew how his life was askew and how awful he'd really been feeling. Chris took him in, let the process begin of trying to find what was wrong. They found out the answer was multiple cancers that he may have had all along. Max, too, was ailing. His health had been failing, and Dad just couldn't quite cope. So Jill took on the chore of addressing his sores and has given him plenty of hope. Dad was a father, he was, but also because a teacher at Hardy would stay. One night near the end, he had to send some lessons of life our way. He asked if we'd had any regrets since he and Joan met, or if they had gotten it right. We said they'd done good so that he understood that he had no issues to raise that night. With that out of the way, there are some things left to say, just a few things I'll remember so well, a few others for sure I'll not make you endure, so here are a few I can tell. Yellowstone Park, because of the dark, brought us one example. The event did unfold, and we'd all been told to go and give it a sample. When dealing at night with the absence of light, when taking a trip to the John one evening, he said, "Keep one eye shut when you go into the hut to preserve your night vision when leaving." Joan laughed a ton, and so it began, the story of Jack, the one-eyed camper. Frugal Jack, he'd put it back together when stuff was broken. An example to share was the broken chair that Joan had just sat down in. He rushed over to it and said he could do it, patch it and make it last, but truth be told, it was way too old, and its lifespan had surely been passed. Builder Dad had certainly had enough of the noise from the street, though not complicated. The fence he created at 69 Elm back in town blocked out the view from many or few of the cars that went zipping around. The backboard deflector and rooftop protector he built for the garage was fine. It was a simple invention with the clear intention of not trapping the balls that went offline. Yeah, almost done. There's lots more that's clear, stories we'd love to hear and retell to those around us, but all I can say is on this sad day, an incredible grief will have found us. That's enough, I'm afraid. And if I have overstayed my time on the platform before you, I'd like to close and say, Dad, if you're listening, please let it be known I adore you. And may you rest in peace and enjoy being with Joan, and know we all miss you both.
Okay, it just seems kind of unfair that I have to follow that. But I'll try. My dad's life always seemed like a story to me. A story that had a wide array of characters and settings and time frames. And while I was not able personally to be with Dad at the beginning of his story, I was fully involved in the middle and privileged to be a character right up to the very end. The amazing details of Dad's life, the people he knew, the places he went, the adventures he had. Those stories were the backdrop of my childhood. I would listen to his tales of years in the army, and I would the sit-ins that he would attend so that he missed his classes and had to lose his student deferment was just an amazing story to me. And he gave up a full scholarship to Princeton. I mean, who does that, right? The challenges he faced built such a life that I would think to myself, how could one's life hold so much? And I would sit and soak up the descriptions of things like him walking on his hands from his house to the bus stop, and then climbing up into the bus still on his hands. I always wondered what the bus driver must have been thinking. I would imagine him as a tap dancing partner for his sister Marilyn. They tap danced their way to, I don't know if it was stardom, but at least they had fun. He took piano lessons, and he was such a modest man, he never played in front of us, but I could only imagine how wonderful he must have been. I was enamored of Dad and of his tales, and I remember thinking that no life could ever be so rich. And I wondered, gee, when I grow up, will I have similar life experiences to share with my kids? Only time will tell, I'm just warning you. The richness of Dad's story, the central theme, the problems, the solutions, were all centered on us as a family. His gentle love and calm in the face of any storm, it anchored us, it held us fast to one another, and provided us with the comfort and security that we needed to grow into the people that we are today. Dad took great pride in his role as a father. He was just the go-to dad for anything that we would need. A flat tire on our bike, unable to figure out algebra, which I still can't figure out. Learning to steer into the skid in our frequent snowstorms here in the north. He could solve any problem, and I grew up convinced that there was just nothing that Dad could not do. As his story continued, and as we grew and left home and had kids of our own, he still seemed to have all the answers. And if he didn't, he managed to impart the belief that he knew we were smart enough to figure out the answers ourselves. A question we asked of Dad, an opinion that was sought, or problems discussed, were always met with wisdom and patience, no matter how old we were. In his final chapter, I found the one thing that Dad could not do. I found the one question he could not answer. What does one do when the love of their life is gone? How do you fill the empty hours? Where can you go when all around you are reminders of your aloneness? He was lost. He floundered and he grew tired. He tried to take solace in the friendships that he and Joan had made in the Keys. He found some comfort in the companionship of us, his children, and the grandchildren. But in the end, he found his answer. My dad's story has always been precious to me, and there is no greater gift than the hours that we shared as his remaining pages dwindled. We had hours together to watch the Olympics, which he blamed wholeheartedly for his double vision, which was very funny. He had the opportunity to get to know the grandchildren, as large as life, or in Jake's case, even larger. We shared memories of the past. We spent hours recalling details from our many camping trips, unable to decide which part we liked the best, but it was always fun to talk about them. We discussed the issues of the day as we watched the news or listened to NPR, and together we dared to dream. We dared to dream of yet one more trip. I wanted to take him to Hawaii, and he didn't make it. Dad lived a life of love, and he had one regret, that he had stayed so long with our mom, that he, in the end, wished he had had more time with his soulmate, that he had had more time to spend with Joan. Dad has found his final answer. He is free of care and safe in the future of each of us. He lives on in the twinkle in Todd's eye, in the richness of Terry's laugh, in the certainty of Nancy's leadership, and in the way that Jill loves that dog, Max. He lives on in the telling of his story in the generations that have yet to come. His strength and his moral convictions live on, and I will stand tall and face any obstacle with his love in my heart. You will always live here, Dad.
Okay, yeah, it's tough being the youngest. I'm not sure where to start. I beg your patience in advance. Should I start to falter and trip over words and emotions? Simply stated, my father was the most important man in my life. One of my fondest, earliest memories was some formal function or other. My father would dance with me by holding my hand and standing on his shoes. Do you remember that? He did the actual dancing. As I grew older, I held memories of him, of the smell of Old Spice. I think we just found that mug, the Old Spice mug with the old shaving brush. Does anybody remember that? My habit of searching out the shaving cup, which I'm sure is pretty old school these days, and sniffing it to reassure myself of his presence. At that young age, I honestly felt he'd be around to have my back forever. We were a family fortunate enough to travel a lot, which was my father's favorite thing ever, but if it hadn't been for Joan, we never actually would have pulled it off. None of us was organized enough, let's face it. Once on the road, my dad was totally in his element. We had been schooled hard in various national parks and historic sites. Although we revere it now, at the time, there was a lot of time on the road playing Spit and Rummy 500, ringing a bell. When we weren't on the road, we were ensconced in an old Victorian house in Oneonta before moving to the lake house in, I want to say, 1977. Anybody correct me, is that right? Okay, thank you, Todd. We loved 16 Elm Street, created many imaginative games, usually incorporated the band of the times, the Monkees, TV show The Times, Star Trek. Somehow we always knew which character we were bound to depict and rarely argued about it, although I could have memories of this different from my siblings. I always wanted to be Chekhov. Chris and I argued about that sometimes. Nancy was always Spock. There was never a question about that. Never a question. I've been informed we also had a mail system through which we passed notes. I didn't remember this until recently. I think, Chris, you mentioned it. There were a lot of bedrooms on the second floor of that house. It was a big house, so that makes sense. It was a good system. Bottom line, we never realized we weren't a traditional family, and we adapted to each other accordingly. I honestly don't know how I would have gotten through the past few months without you guys. Once we did move to the lake house, I was the youngest and eventually only child in the house after my siblings moved on to college. Dad busied himself making sure I was adept at pretty much every water sport. He was very proud of how well I water skied, which I did at the time. But I also did canoeing, swimming, sailing, and I thrived. But one of his last questions to me was, did I regret him moving me out there and moving me away from my friends? And I said, oh my God, Dad, are you kidding me? No, of course not. I loved it out there. It was the best thing I ever did. I love the water. I always have. I think I had this in common with Dad, and it was one of our strongest bonds. The little sunfish sailboat we had, which I think we have pictures of somewhere, I would take out, and I would put Greta on it, and I would tip, and Joan would get so mad. And Dad would have this little smirk on his face when we got back. Greta would be swimming around the boat. I'd get her back on. It was all good, but Dad got a kick out of it. Joan was pissed. I knew she was okay. And I was always rewarded by Dad's secretive smirk when I returned. He was my filter. There's just no better way to word it. My dad loved the water, got near it every chance he could. I think my dad instinctively knew, as I feel in my bones, that's where we all come from. So naturally, we're all drawn to it. I envy my sister the time she spent with him in his final months and hours. I hope he knew how much I thought of him as I tried to focus on work, my kids, and life in general. Every moment, I was preoccupied by what I could do to ease his passing. In the end, it doesn't matter. People go when they want. I sense that. Because I was the youngest of the brood, he wouldn't have gone with me in the room. He didn't go with you in the room. He waited till you stepped out. And that was like the last thing he did for us. I love you, Dad. Peaceful passing.
Jack became my stepfather when I was 11, but as he laid down a steady foundation to our lives, it wasn't long before he became my dad. My mom was the fast-moving, vocal, emotive presence. He was the steady, soft-spoken, even-tempered, funny one. He was wonderful for her and for all of us. His passions for traveling and vacations were the inspiration for our many family trips, first in a pop-up camper, next in our first Winnebago, the first of a series of many motorhomes on which he would leave his unique sense of architectural design, customizing each space to make it our own. The last few motorhomes were just called the Taj Mahals, so. Where my mom taught me to swear before I was in kindergarten, Jack gave me the best rationale I ever heard for not swearing often when he told me, if you swear routinely, then you have no words left to communicate real anger. I only saw him angry probably less than a dozen times in the 44 years that he was part of my life. Now, Jill says she saw him angry a whole lot more, so. Given that he was dad to five kids, I think that's pretty remarkable. Jack taught me to love classical music and jazz. He encouraged my love of astronomy and later my interest in studying psychology and drug and alcohol addiction. He taught me to drive and insisted that I learn to drive on a standard, something I cursed him for at the time and now I'm grateful for. He did renege and say that I didn't have to take the test on the standard, and that was a relief. Over the years, he would then regularly check in to find out what vehicle I was currently driving and would weigh in on whether he thought that was a good car or not. Even when he was in the hospital a month before his death, he checked in to find out what I was driving and approved of my Honda CR-V that I bought used because that's where you get the best value, which is something I also learned from him. He played an especially important role in my teen years as he helped my mother and me negotiate our relationship. He supported us through many tearful, angry exchanges. I don't remember the details of how he did this, only that he did do it, and that his even-tempered, steady presence shepherded us through the turmoil that can characterize mother-daughter relationships during adolescence. It's hard for me to think of him separately from my mom. Perhaps you've seen those perception prints in psychology where there's black silhouette profiles against white backgrounds, and they allow you to see two different perspectives, both the black profiles and the white that fills it in. In Gestalt psychology, these are called the figure ground organization. That is, the combination of the figure and its background as a unique grouping. Both are necessary for you to see the whole. My parents had a figure ground relationship, with my mother as the figure and Jack as the ground. She was the one people noticed first, but make no mistake about it, the ground is just as key as the figure. That's who they were, and it's no wonder he felt so lost without her when she died. It was only after my mom died that I had a chance to get to know him for himself, separate from the Jack and Joan team. I tried to make sure he had a continuous supply of Biscoff cookies, cookies that Jack determined could be dipped equally well in coffee or bourbon, depending on the time of day. We shared some of our grief about losing Mom and our puzzlement over what actually caused her death. And then we talked about current events like the 50th anniversary of JFK's death and JFK's legacy, with both of us wondering what her take on the anniversary commemoration would have been. I know he missed her quick intelligence and observations about the world. Ideas were something that they really shared and loved together. I like to think I was able to give him a little bit of that in some of our conversations in the final months of his life. Upon returning from the Keys in January, his life really had to focus on coping with his rapidly declining health. He had to really withdraw from the world, from friends, and even from those of us who were not based in Albany. Chris will tell you that I finally sent her a telephone, a portable telephone, so I could talk to him because He just wasn't able to negotiate her house to be able to use the phones there. But throughout it all, he maintained his essential self, even-tempered and low-key, punctuated by his quick, dry wit. I only hope that when my time comes that I can face my end of life with the same grace, courage, and humor that he displayed and taught us about in his final days.
As a group, this is a pretty hard act to follow, so I should have seen that coming and not gone last, but oh well, we all have our crosses to bear. Jack came into my life when I was almost 9. I was a hyperactive little monster that had never had a positive male role model in my life. What few positive memories I had of my biological dad were not very strong. Jack was steady, patient, and a caring father and never seemed too busy to answer your question. He never tried to force himself as a father to me. He just was always there, providing stoic support. His style over time drew me closer to him, and my respect for him grew every year. Not only was he the greatest man that I've ever known, but he's also one of the finest people that I have had the opportunity to know as well. His endless knowledge of almost every subject was a constant source of learning, from architecture, science, automobiles, music, education, grammar, and just everything you could ask, he knew a little bit about it. Jack was a great listener. My wife Shanna told me the other night as she remembered Jack, he always had a clean slate with him, even though he knew the story. He had the most wonderful eyes, and if you can make him laugh or smile, it was pretty wonderful. If Jack was amused, he would lightly raise his shoulders up and down as he chuckled. It was adorable. You got a certain sense of satisfaction when you could amuse him. He had a dry and intelligent wit. I recall once we were driving into a campground and there was a sign that said, "Slow children at play." Jack softly read the sign out loud and then said, "I wonder where the smart ones play." I remember in eighth grade, my English teacher, who was also my homeroom teacher, had written on my interim report card that I was sometimes disruptive in class, along with a few other choice comments. Of course, this was no news to Jack, so he took a red pen and corrected her grammar and signed the report card for me to give back. Needless to say, my teacher was not exactly thrilled with that, but I was one of her better students, so she didn't take it out on me too much. On camping trips, the long driving days were tough on everyone. Jack and Mom had a system for everything, from the shelves that Jack built in the closet so each kid could have their own laundry basket for their clothes and stuff, to stopping at a rest area so Mom could put a bag of pot roast and potatoes in the oven and then back on the road for another hour while it cooked. The days could be long, and sometimes we were allowed to sit in front with Mom in the double chair and get the bird's eye view of the road. Jack was an amazing driver. He always kept his cool and was in control of his vehicle and constantly aware of everything around him that could happen. I will never forget at the end of one camping trip, we were coming down Franklin Mountain in the motorhome, anxious to be home in 20 minutes. As we came around the corner, a pickup truck was passing over the double yellow line in our lane. Jack deftly and calmly steered the motorhome to the right, up an embankment and out of danger, and then back down on the pavement. He did this with no skidding, no swerving, almost effortlessly. I watched it with my own eyes in disbelief of what I had witnessed. Oh yeah, one more thing. He had a mug of coffee in his right hand and he didn't even spill a drop. Jack and my mom were the perfect team. They talked about everything and had a strategy to succeed. Many of these strategies were invisible to us, so it would just seem they were the one united front. You could not outsmart them or outmaneuver them. We tried, but most of the time we got caught, and we tried to go against the rules. So since the rules were pretty fair, it just became easier to follow them. I am so fortunate to have Jack in my life for 44 years. His love, wisdom, support, and steadiness were always there. He was the role model that showed me how to love and respect in a relationship as a man. He taught by example, not by preaching. Although he's no longer with us, his legacy lives in each one of us. I owe him so much and am grateful that he was in my life. Together, my siblings and I go forward with our lives, carrying on the legacy and trying to be as good as he was. Although we may not meet the mark, we still strive every day to provide a fraction of what he provided us. Rest in peace, Jack. You will never be forgotten.
Yes. I was just about to invite if there are others present who want to speak. You've obviously been here before. If something hasn't been shared and needs to be shared here, I invite you forward.
This might surprise a lot of you, but Jack was an anarchist. Joan informed Irene and I of that when we went to visit him in May of 2013 during my 40th college reunion. Jack just rolled his eyes and grinned. Joan elaborated that when she and Jack joined up, that she was a cat person and Jack was a dog person. He was very strict in how a dog had to be trained. Consistency was the key. Any deviation would only confuse Max One. Joan followed his lead on how to train and work with Max. The current Max was certified as a service dog so they could keep him at their place in Key West, which Joan thought was laughable. It seemed that with Jack, there were no rules. Anything went regarding Max, and Joan had to be the one who was the heavy when it came to training. She was having a challenge to getting Max to do what she wanted because Jack was an anarchist. And she was giving Jack hell about it in her usual way. Jack spoke proudly about an uncommon mid-70s Camry station wagon and about how much he loved that car. As there were very few sold in the U.S. This time, Joan rolled her eyes. That's a bond that Jack and I shared. I have a late 90s Camry with a lot of miles on it, and I love that car. And I mentioned that to him, and this time, Irene and Joan shared that usual, wife look. We laughed about the blue station wagon they had in the early 70s. Okay, I'm sure all you kids remembered it. It was painted with a paintbrush. Okay, am I exaggerating?
No, you are not.
Okay, it's funny the things you remembered. We talked about a cross-country trip they took in their Winnebago Brave. There was a problem with the starter on the Winnebago, and Jack would have to get under the beast to tap on the starter while Joan started it. Okay, in one of the campgrounds, there was a guy that made Joan very nervous, and you know Joan when she's nervous, okay? Can you picture Joan panicking while Jack calmly and methodically went, got the hammer, got up, got outside, crawled under, and Joan's in there getting ready to turn the key. Patience wasn't Joan's biggest strength, but it was definitely Jack's. Jack was George Byrne to Joan's Gracie Allen, the straight man with the dry sense of humor. Actually, Joan was more of a George Carlin than Gracie, but you get the idea. They were the perfect balance for each other. I spoke with Jack after Joan's memorial service, and his biggest concern, actually, maybe his only concern, was what about Max? He didn't feel capable of taking care of Max and was discussing putting him to sleep because he didn't think it was fair to Max. We talked about it for quite a while, and he agreed that it wasn't really a good option. When I found out that Jack was in the hospital, the first question I communicated with Jill was, where's Max? And she said, she's got him. And knowing that Max, was part of Jill's family and was being spoiled was a very great relief to me and closure for Jack. When Joan died unexpectedly, a large part of Jack died with her. When I got home after the memorial service, I told Irene that I hoped I died first. Without skipping a beat and with no malice, she said, I hope you do too. We both laughed at a comment that I could see Joan saying that. Okay. I can't think of one without the other, and they are together again. I thought of an analogy here, you know, that they were like lichen, fungus, and algae. One can't live without the other. I'm very grateful that for the two of them and the family were a very important part of my life, and they still are. And they're, to me, they're like younger brothers and sisters. And I'm grateful for Joan and Jack.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you know, Joan would have done it too.
Congregation does it all the time.
Is there anybody else that would like to share? These then are a few of our thoughts and stories and remembrances of Jack Iverson. I should note that when I showed up to talk to the family, the first thing I did is I brought in a treat for Max. I remembered. Charles Gaines wrote, "No person can sum up the life of another. Life is too precious to be passed over with mere words which ring empty. Rather, it must remain as it is remembered by those who loved and watched and shared. For such memories are alive, unbound by the events of birth and death. And as living memories, we possess the greatest gift one person can give another." It is to each of you then that the living memories of Jack Iverson's life are committed. To your hearts and minds go the enduring stories, images, and remembrances of his life. We lit this candle in honor of Jack Iverson's life. I extinguish it now in honor of his death. Though the flame that was is no more, the warmth, comfort, and light it brought to this space remain. The love and laughter, the care and compassion, the wisdom he shared, the differences he made and the contributions he made, the stories and memories of Jack remain in our hearts and in the marks that he made upon our lives. May we carry these with us always. In closing, I offer this reading chosen by Jack's family entitled One at Rest. The original author is unknown. Think of me as one at rest. For me, you should not weep. I have no pain, no troubled thoughts, for I am just asleep. The living, thinking me that was is now forever still, and life goes on without me now, as time forever will. If your heart is heavy now because I've gone away, dwell not long upon it, friend, for none of us can stay. Those of you who liked me, I sincerely thank you all. And those of you who loved me, I thank you most of all. And in my fleeting lifespan, as time went rushing by, I found some time to hesitate, to laugh, to love, to cry. Matters it now if time began, if time will ever cease? I was here. I used it all. And now I am at peace. We have bid farewell to Jack Iverson, and in some ways bid farewell to Joan again as well. We are profoundly glad that Jack lived. We cherish the memory of this man and the example that he was for us. Carrying him thus in our hearts, let us close this time of mourning and celebration, assured that even in this time of loss and sorrow, life remains precious and good. May we also on this day rekindle in our hearts an appreciation for the gifts of life and those that share life with us. Let us honor the life of Jack Iverson by reaching out to those around us, teaching what we can, caring for one another, and making a difference today and in the days ahead. As you return to your routines of your lives, I bid you go in peace, and may peace go with you. I invite you to remain seated for the postlude, after which we will convert this space into a hall of fellowship, and we will share some of Jack's favorite food and drink. I am told there will be bourbon. We will also share as many stories of Jack and Joan as we can remember and share. So may it be.